Well, howdy, folks, and welcome to Small Town Radio, the show with the biggest facts about the smallest town. Today, I'm your rootin' tootin' host, Maxim, and I'm joined today by my co-host,
Yeehaw!
Yeehaw! That's it right there. It's me and Yeehaw for this episode, and today we're going to be taking you to a little place called Port Hope, Maryland.
Port Hope?
Oh, sorry. Port Tobacco. Port Tobacco.
We've done Port Hope before.
My brain is all messed up about it. Getting these things mixed up. Too many towns. As I said that, I accidentally hit the desktop show on my laptop, so my notes went away, and so I didn't have the title in front of me, so I was like, it's Port, and then my muscle memory was like, Hope. Nope, that's not it. It's Port Tobacco, Maryland.
Port Hope was only a few weeks ago, so it makes sense.
Time isn't real anymore.
it's wild. Do you know what I realized last night? So everyone on this who's been following this podcast also knows I've been at my parents' house for a while now, almost 4 months. Yeah. And I think this is the longest time I've lived in this house because my parents moved right before I went to college. So I didn't live here all that long. And gotcha. I only was home for like summers, which were not 4 months.
Right.
And I'm approaching 4 months, but it also feels like I've been here for 6 weeks max because the days just blur together.
Yep. Yeah, but that sounds about right.
We have escapism through this podcast, so I've really been quite a number of places.
This is the only day that Connor has in his memories because it's the recording day when he actually has something to do. No, just kidding. You've been, Connor, if you don't know or follow him, Connor's been killing it doing some stand up with our buddy Trevor from the New Hampshire episode up there. So,
yeah, it's been, to be honest, though, it's the only time I leave the house doing stand up. There's very little movement around otherwise. So,
you know,
you're not completely wrong.
Right. I've been doing some stand up, like all like outdoor stuff, of course, and like rooftop. And yesterday I did two mics up at a QED comedy club in Astoria, and they had this nice little shady backyard. And the second set I did, I actually crushed it. And I was like, oh my God, I remember what it's like to be funny. It's been so long. Like all the sets I had done, like probably the 4 or 5 before that during quarantine, I was like, I'm out of practice. My memory is shot. My jokes kind of fall flat. And then that one, it's like, I still have it. I can get back on this wagon, back on the comedy wagon. I don't know.
Yeah, for me, it's finally because you've known this. People would come up to me and they would say things like, oh, you got great stage presence or something. And it's really frustrating because it's like, well, I don't want great stage presence. I want to be funny.
Yeah.
And finally, like the last few shows, people have consistently been like, oh yeah, that was really funny. And I was like, thank you. Maybe it's just I've been performing in front of smarter people that give better compliments, but it's finally turning that page where it's like, oh, you're complimenting the thing I'm trying to do, not some extra thing that's kind of a piece of it. So
yeah, it's great. I think that's a problem a lot of comedians have. And I think part of it also is the situation of like being in New York City and only performing in front of comedians. And now you're out and you're performing in front of audiences. And it's like, oh, right, your material is actually really good. It's just that comedians hold such a high standard for each other that
I don't think we hold that high of a standard. I think it's more we just don't care all that much about our fellow comedians. I'm going to put that out, like, we care about it on a personal level, but you get desensitized after you've seen 20 shows in a week.
Yeah.
Or it's like, there's like pockets of people who are really supportive to people that they know, but I mean, I've definitely been at things where I'm just like, you know what? I'm tired of all this. So it's, I do think it's, comedians in general are supportive and very friendly, and the community in New York is great, but there's just something about seeing so many shows where like, I don't know if it's a standard as much as just burnout rate, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, when you did your show at Broadway Comedy Club, almost all the comedians, I was like, they sat us front row. I don't know if we talked about this in the show before, but like a big group of us come in to see Connor perform, and it's like six or seven of us, and we're all comedians except for one other person. And they sit us front and center on the stage, and me and my girlfriend are front row, and we are literally almost dozing off during some of these people's sets. And I was so tired, and I'm like yawning, and the audience kept picking on us, and it was a disaster. And I'm like, yeah, I feel like we should have told them we were comedians on the way in so they wouldn't put us front and center, because I just like, you're right, we're just desensitized to it. You're like, oh, it's just another comedian. It's just he's on a club stage instead of an open mic, instead of our beloved African restaurant.
To be honest, this time just doing shows has completely changed my perspective on how comedy should be in terms of, you know, our levels. Like, there needs to be a balance of real people and real people in the audience and comedians in the audience, not necessarily at every place, but like just getting in front of real people consistently is so important, because the fact is it's so hard to judge jokes off of people who are writing their own, thinking about their own, or just straight up on their phone during your set or writing jokes. Like, they're not going to laugh no matter how good the joke is. So it's tough to gauge it as it is. So it's really important. I'm learning more and more to get in front of real people consistently to make sure that the material is as good as you think it is.
So you're basically telling me you've ascended to the next level of comedian and the rest of us are left in the dirt still.
No, I'm just saying there's something to strive for and it's more fulfilling.
I've seen the light. I can report the light is real. There is something at the end of the tunnel.
It's interesting too, because our friend Trevor, who is on the podcast, as Maxim said, has been kind of preaching this for a while. It's like, you know, don't judge your stuff off of open mics because it's just comedians watching your stuff who aren't necessarily going to laugh. And it could be a really funny joke, but they just aren't going to laugh no matter what. In some places, not all places. Yeah. And so it's like, oh yeah, that's what he's been saying for a while. That's true. That's fairly true. You need to have some balance of it. So just wise words coming to fruition.
I hate him because he's the voice of reason in our group chat all the time with, like, when it comes to comedy. And I'm like, where is this knowledge coming from? And why do I feel so much better about myself? I hate you. Just kidding. Yeah, I love him. He's great. He has good perspective on it.
Do you know what we should get some good perspective on, though?
How your 4th of July weekend was?
I was going to say our town, but the 4th of July. I will say this. It felt different.
Yeah.
And I have a strong feeling that it's going to feel different throughout the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Where there's been a disillusionment of the American dream, which, I don't know, I felt for a while. Like, I've never, you know, the country's provides a lot of good in a lot of different areas, but we're far from perfect. And that's been pretty clear, but this year feels different, and hopefully it will feel different in the future because things are better. Not necessarily where it is this year, but like there will be a good sense of difference moving forward. So
are you retiring your 4th of July American flag jockstrap or no?
No. I feel like that's the perfect symbol of freedom.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one you wear to all your shows under your pants. That's a little confidence booster. You've got a little secret, and it's an American flag jockstrap.
It's not a full secret, because I always try and get the whale tail effect, but...
Classy.
Yeah. And then I have this bend and snap section of my set, but it's not always... Sometimes I lose confidence right before I do it, so...
Connor's a early 2000s smoke show. With very thin eyebrows and a whale tail. All right, you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's say our social media really quick, though, which is at ST Radio Pod on the Instagram, smalltownradiopodcast@gmail.com for emails. We're always looking for town suggestions from you all, our beloved goblin listeners. Rate and review us on iTunes, and if you give us a 5-star rating, we will send you some stickers. Other than that, let's get on our ship and go on this trip, floating Yeehaw. Through the sky.
Okay, all right.
But
you
can't
get to this place by ship anymore.
That's true.
That's true. All right, so today, listeners, we're taking you down to Port Tobacco Village, Maryland. Yeah, so Port Tobacco Village, Maryland is a village in Charles County, which is in southern Maryland. Population is 13, making it the smallest incorporated town in Maryland.
Choo-choo.
Choo-choo. So originally the area was home to the Potapoco and Piscataway people. The English settled there sometime around 1634 on the Port Tobacco River, and the settlers named the village Chandlerstown. And it's actually, the town is one of the oldest English-speaking communities on the east coast of the United States. In 1658, it was designated the first county seat of Charles County. Later, the English adopted the Potapoco name as Port Tobacco. So they heard Potapoco, and they're like, it kind of sounds like Port Tobacco, so we're just going to name it that. But also, they grew a lot of tobacco there.
I take issue with that, as mm-hmm. well as it being one of the oldest English-speaking areas in the country. Because it's like, I get it was settled fairly early on, but like, mm-hmm. weren't other settlements also English-speaking? Like a number of them in the U.S.?
But 1634 is pretty early.
It's pretty early, but it's basically a roundabout saying it was one of the first settlements. That's what yeah,
it might be one of the last places that's still around from then.
Oh.
Or maybe the last permanent settlement. Who okay. knows? So they also grew a lot of tobacco, which also contributed to the name. The town of Port Tobacco was established in 1727, and it actually became the second largest town in Maryland. They did a lot of exports on the Port Tobacco River, sending out tobacco and such. And then in like the late 1800s, they experienced huge population decline due to silting of the river, which is when the river starts getting overflown with like sediment, and it made the crops so they couldn't grow there because the water had so much silt in it. And then on top of that, it made the river unnavigable. So normally with this river, they could get to the Chesapeake Bay, Atlantic Ocean, boom, you got your port there. But when the river started silting, they couldn't get the ships out and they couldn't grow crops. Additionally, as we all know, the death sentence of most of these towns is the railroad went around them.
Yep.
And then finally, the seat of the county was moved off of Port Tobacco, but the village itself remains to this day and is very much preserved for its historic significance. So there's like a couple people that live there, like these 13 people, but nothing real kind of happens there. It's just kind of a historic town nowadays.
Yeah, and it's interesting to add on to some of the history that in 1888, a small portion of Port Tobacco decided to incorporate to become Port Tobacco Village. And so the incorporation was actually a last-ditch effort to be like, no, we're legitimate, we're real, which is opposite. I feel like it's usually the first stepping stone for towns to say they're real, but not here. A little bit backwards.
It's like Horton Hears a Who, but for towns. We are here. We are here.
Also, a fun fact is before being called Port Tobacco, it was called Chandlerstown mm-hmm. for a very brief period, which I just think that's very something that I'm going to come back to later on. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Great. You can all expect a Friends reference somewhere in the Goblin Gallery. Am I hitting the nail on the head?
Potentially. No spoilers, though.
No spoilers.
As you mentioned, though, it's kind of a historic town today, but I went on to www.visitmaryland.org/city, which it's not a city, /Port Tobacco.
Chill on the URLs, Connor. Chill on the URLs.
Hey, I want people to come through and fact check me. I want people to get the joy of learning that this town with 13 people in the 2010 census, 15 people in the 2017 estimate, has 7 attractions. That means there is more than about one attraction for every 2 people that live there, which is astonishing. That's the way I feel. You're
there's
not
astonished. There's more attractions than there are people.
There's
that's what you said.
There's
that's
more
crazy.
People than attractions, but not by that much. So you
that's
know,
crazy.
That's the way it is. That's the way it is today.
Such is the way. This is the way. If these little places always like, you have the few people who take care of it, and then they have a bunch of stuff to do. They need a reason to have people come there.
They're holding on. They're holding on. And they're keeping their incorporation too, which, you know, hey, hold on to that history. My friends.
My 13 friends.
Yeah,
we're always doing places that are like on the brink of dying.
I mean, small towns. I'm curious what percentage of people actually go to town hall meetings, because I'm guessing it's a very large percent, because even if 2 show up, you know, if 3 show up, you get a quarter of people.
People are very involved in their community here because they are the community.
Yeah. Along with history, though.
Yeah.
So it's interesting talking about the silt that has kind of helped bring the downfall of this small, well, once big town. It really wasn't that big, to be honest. I looked at the population numbers, and I know it was after its peak, but still, the census data that started in 1870 said that the population was only 215. So I don't know if it was bigger before that, because I know that was after the beginning of the decline, but still,
yep.
Still, regardless, the silting that caused some of the decline in the city is also something that has helped the city remain somewhat important in modern times, because the 1819 courthouse has been renovated for use as a historical museum. And in 2017, a consortium started the Port Tobacco Archaeology Project, which devoted to revealing the history of Native Americans and colonial Europeans and Africans. And because of its unique history, the area is one of the richest archaeological sites in southern Maryland. And a lot of history is preserved due to the silting that occurred in that area. Yeah. So they're able to find stuff and trace it back to the history of pre-settlement and up to the colonial time, the revolutionary time.
Yeah, it's mentioned it's a big place for like they learn a lot here about how the original English settlers and the native population interacted because of their archaeological finds. Like, that's a key thing in this area.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because I went and I found the study the paper that they put out about this, and I was like, oh, what did they find? And it was just more or less a procedural of like how they did it. Mm-hmm. So I went to like the conclusion in the intro, and I was like, this is how we dug, and this is the methodology we used. I'm like, this is not interesting to me.
The key for any research paper that's actually written is just read the abstract and skip the rest.
I did read the abstract, and then I read the conclusion, and I was like, you gotta put something fun in here for me. Come on.
I need some pictures. Give me a little cartoon.
I don't even care if it's a real picture. Your kid could have drawn it. Whatever. Just hold my interest.
Yeah, I would like to do... If I'm going to read your PhD paper, listen, it needs to be in comic strip form. It needs to read like
papyrus,
a Baby Blues comic.
Papyrus font only, please.
Yeah, papyrus font only.
Can you make it a movie instead? I don't want to read this.
I was putting together a flyer for a show I'm doing like next weekend, I guess this weekend as of time of release, but I had to stop my my co-producer from using Comic Sans on the flyer. I was like, no, 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 no. We don't do that.
Should have let
them. We are classy.
They should have a font called Comics Comic that only comics use.
Comedians only font. It's like a it's a dog whistle for comedians, but not in a bad way.
Well, one of the interesting things too is the town decided to use its population to help with the excavation, and they like made a blog about it. And so I went through the blog. There's some information about what they found, because they found African Americans, enslaved people's tombstones that they made for themselves and how it was preserved. And it was really, you know, interesting to learn that history. But it was also like thinking about this town that put together a blog that only has 13 people, and they're asking the community for like support with it. I'm like, you know what? You're not drawn from a large pool right here.
Yeah, it's like us asking for town suggestions from our listener base.
Oh yeah. So
we spend a lot of time making this podcast. Just please tell your friends about it. Just kidding.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because while the town has disappeared, the history has not.
Yeah. There's one thing in this history that was kind of interesting. Is Port Tobacco during the Civil War became known as a stronghold of Confederate sympathizers, even though Union troops occupied the town. There was actually a renowned Confederate spy, Rose O'Neill Greenhow, who was operating in D.C., but she was born in this town. And she was hired by a Confederate general who was like, used to be a spy, and she took over his network. She actually like contributed due to the military plan she passed over to the Confederates in 1861. She was credited with ensuring their victory at the first Battle of Bull Run in July 1861.
Maximum.
That's pretty crazy.
I guess what I'm trying to distill for our listeners is we're saying if this isn't their favorite episode, that they should blame the Confederacy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. 100%. Also, did you feel any conflict reading this and being like, wow, this is a really interesting story of a 19th century woman doing something really important, but for the Confederacy?
Yeah, she was promoted really high, but she was on the wrong side of history. Yeah. I was impressed that she was involved at all and promoted at all. I was like, good for her, but also fuck you. Like, it's like, yeah.
It was, yeah, one of those things where like, this is cool. There was a ton of stuff going on during the Civil War in this area around like the history of the time.
And there was actually like a weird little thing here. So the local slaves in Maryland were freed following the adoption of a new constitution on November 1st, 1864. And the Emancipation Proclamation took place in 1863. And the reason they had slaves for a full year is that the Emancipation Proclamation did not apply to states which remained in the Union.
I read that too, and I was like, what?
I was like, holy shit, you mean like Lincoln was like, no more slaves unless you fought for me, then you can have them and then you can decide when to get rid of them.
I also singled that out because that seems wild. Basically, I don't know, I need to do more research on this and learn, but the Emancipation Proclamation seems like it was a direct attack and direct address on the Confederacy and not necessarily the nation as a whole, which, you know, kind of blows my mind in some ways, but also, should I be that surprised given the time we're living in? No, I really shouldn't be anymore.
Nothing surprises me anymore.
Surprise!
I'm hoping that August...
Nothing? No reaction at all from that?
No reaction. Sorry. I think the only thing that would surprise me at this point is like an alien like presence becoming known in August. They're like, okay, listen, you guys, we know you guys are trying to make things better, but this is not working out quick enough. So we've decided to come from the Intergalactic Federation and help you guys out a little bit, because You're working on it, but you could be doing better.
Would it surprise you if I strip naked while we're doing this video call?
Absolutely.
There it Absolutely. Is. Well, challenge accepted. Here we go, folks.
I'll just like minimize it and continue talking like nothing's happening. So this is a quick follow-up too regarding the Civil War era. So after John Wilkes Booth killed President Lincoln, the way they caught John Wilkes Booth was they actually acquired information from a co-conspirator of John Wilkes Booth while he was staying in a Port Tobacco hotel. So they found out the information from his co-conspirator, and then they managed to track down John Wilkes Booth because of this. But John Wilkes Booth died during the attempted capture. But they kind of the last stage of the hunt for John Wilkes Booth started in Port Tobacco.
The interesting thing here, too, I want to point out in connection with Lincoln. So Lincoln was assassinated in Ford's Theater in 1865. But Wikipedia does not start the census for Port Tobacco until 1870. Is it a conspiracy theory that Wikipedia is against censuses before Lincoln died? Is Wikipedia against counting Abraham Lincoln in censuses? I don't know.
You know what's crazy? Dallas has no census information before JFK was shot.
What? We are uncovering something. You know, there's no census data on the U.S. before the U.S. government was established?
Oh, my God.
We got to get to the bottom of that.
I'm scared. Help me. I'm scared.
This is why we need the aliens to come down and help us figure this out. This is the most pressing issue this podcast has ever faced.
Aliens come to Earth, and our one question is for them is like, so when was America great?
They go, let me look at that census data real quick and try and figure that one out.
It's like in that South Park episode where they meet God and they get to ask him one question, and Stan asks him, God, why haven't I got my period yet? And he's like, you're a boy. Like,
oh, man.
Okay, so I think we got one more fact for this place, right?
Oh, I have one interesting one. I'll make it quick.
Oh, I do too, actually.
Do you have the, I'm assuming, one about folklore?
Yeah, there's folklore, and then there's one about a church.
I got the church one. That's okay, the one I was thinking about. We should. All right. So there's a lot of the sites to see in Port Tobacco are the historic places, just as the nature of the town. And so there's a place called St. Thomas's Manor and Cemetery at Chapel Point, and it is the oldest continually operating Catholic parish in the United States.
In the original 13 colonies.
Yeah. And it's really interesting too, because it says it's St. Thomas's Manor, but it's one of the wings is St. Ignatius Church. And the history of it too is a lot of trying to convert indigenous people's beliefs to fall in line with the Catholic Church. And there's clearly a joke that any of you can make about, you know, the oldest Catholic parish in the United States, about, you know, the history with Catholicism recent. But it's also interesting looking at how this actually was in some ways beneficial to the indigenous population as time moved forward, because the church took data on the parishioners and how they were, like who they were, where the census did not. So civil records only use designations of free people of color, colored or Negro for mixed race persons, thus failing to record the cultural identification of Native people. But actually, what the Piscataway descendant tribes used the Catholic Church's record to making cases for their cultural continuity in the area.
Yeah, so basically the government just like erased these people in the census because you were either white or like a non-white group, but they didn't break it down by tribe or like origin.
Mm-hmm.
And the church did that.
Yes.
Also, how old is this church, you ask? It was established in 1662. Very old. Great year for years. I don't know.
Yeah, I also, thinking about it, I quoted from Wikipedia when I said, or Negro for mixed race persons. I felt very weird saying that. I should have corrected that.
That's okay.
I just want that on the record. It was reading off the
It's history. Script, but it's just like reading To Kill a Mockingbird in high school. Everyone, you got to clench your butt cheeks and get through it.
Do you remember those times where teachers would ask people to read in class and then there'd be a really uncomfortable word and be like, no, please don't. Please do not pick me. I don't want to say this.
Yeah, we actually, the worst part about those exercises were kids who were bad at reading out loud. And I give them credit because we had a girl in my German class who was very bad at reading out loud, but she would volunteer. And I'm like, I give you props because I can tell you want to get better at reading German. But also this is like nails on a chalkboard for the rest of us.
Do you feel the same way about those new comedians trying out?
I think the only time that I feel that way about new comedians is when they come on stage with like rape jokes or race jokes or anything that would be problematic if you've been doing it for more than 3 weeks. Like, yeah. The kind of obvious stuff, that stuff is really cringy, but, like, new comedians in general, I'm, like, nothing but supportive because it is hard.
Love it. Love to hear it. Well, okay. Last fact.
So, this is one that is more fun. This is the legend of the blue dog. Yeehaw!
Yes. Hello, you said my name?
You called? So, the legend of the blue dog is a local, like, folklore, urban legend type deal. And in a nutshell, there's Charles County's blue dog legend, which is taught in local schools and has been told in the county for more than 100 years. So, by most accounts, the spirit of a large blue dog protects the treasure of his murdered master, which is supposed to be buried somewhere along Rose Hill Road outside Port Tobacco.
I want to petition to change master to best friend.
Best friend, yeah. So the owner of the Rose Hill property containing the fabled rock where the blue dog and his masters were killed. Charles, I messed that up.
That's okay. There,
so. Charles Stewart was the owner of the Rose Hill property containing the fabled rock where the blue dog and his master were killed. He has said that the first written account of the blue dog legend dates back to 1897 when Olivia Floyd, a also Confederate spy and owner of Rose Hill, told the Port Tobacco Times that she had seen the ghost of the blue dog. And legend has it that Charles Thomas Sims, a soldier and his dog, were killed on February 8th in the 18th century on Rose Hill Road while returning from a Port Tobacco tavern. This was following the American Revolutionary War, and Henry Hanos of Port Tobacco purportedly killed Sims and his dog for Sims' gold and a deed to his estate. Hanos buried the gold and deed under a holly tree along Rose Hill Road. When Hanos returned to recover the buried treasure, he was scared away by the ghost of the blue dog. And then Hanos fell ill and died suddenly. To this day, the blue dog reportedly continues to watch over his slain best friend's treasure.
The thing that I'm trying to piece together right now is, has anyone ever dug this up? Like, is this still there? Can I just go get some gold real quick?
I think that's something that they should do. I don't think they've found it.
What if I just use a metal detector? I'm not actually digging it up. I just want to confirm that it's there.
Yeah, I think the dog would be okay if you were like, I'm not going to take it, but I just want to hear the beep.
What if I brought treats and wanted to adopt the dog?
Yeah, that'd be good too. I think I would be in it just for the deed because owning property in this year is a big deal.
I also like how Wikipedia teed it up in a way I said, Halloween reminds local residents of Charles County's blue dog legend, which is like the way it's phrased is like, this is a real thing that happened. But also remember, ghosts, ghouls, zombies, and monsters are around as well.
Oh yeah, it's Halloween. Oh my God. Do you remember the dog?
Do you remember dogs in general? Wow, what a good costume that would be. Can I make this look sexy and show off my chest hair?
Ew.
See, Maxim says ew because he's minimized my screen and I'm completely naked. But he took a peek at it and saw some chest hair.
All right. Well, that's all we got for the facts. So you want to do our one word ad break?
Yeah.
What do you got?
Water.
Staying hydrated is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, today I'm brought to you by silt in your water. So if you put silt in your water and you drink it, you could be preserved for more than 100 years too.
I'm glad you didn't replace that L with an H and move it forward.
Put shit in your water. All right. Well, folks, we've come to your favorite time of the show, the end of this here rodeo. You know it. You love it. It's time for today's Goblin Gallery. This is the problem with improvising all these parts. I'm like, what am I doing? What sentence am I trying to say? Well, take it away. Hee-haw.
Thank you. Yep. Okay. Right. I was trying to improvise too, but I was following your lead. And I was like, I don't know what to say next.
Yes.
All right.
And I have a Goblin Gallery submission.
I have a Goblin Gallery submission. So we are well aware that Port Tobacco has almost as many attractions as people. Well, I am proposing 6 new attractions to help get that ratio to where it needs to be.
Okay.
So, here we go. The first new attraction, the Silt Spa.
Ooh.
Sit in fine sand, clay, or other material carried by running water and see your body get preserved right into history. Site number 2. Attraction number 2. Boo at the John Wilkes Booth. Booth. And boo at his conspirators. This booth in town holds a painting of the Ford's Theater, where visitors can stand, face, and boo the man and his conspirators who shot Abraham Lincoln.
Boo.
Number 3. The newest church in America. Every day, a tiny home is driven into town and christened as a Catholic church. So now, Port Tobacco can boast the oldest and newest church in America.
You think they'd run out of saints pretty quick?
Hey,
you get about
they
a
can
year
christen
in.
Me. That's fine.
Saint Connor of small town radio parish.
Absolutely, that's the perfect name. Small town radio church, because it's a small town, and their church, their masses are broadcast over the radio. Perfect.
You go in the tiny home, and the walls are covered in soundproofing. It's just actually a small podcasting studio.
All right, let's see. Number 4, the fourth attraction. Plea for the Railroad Pub. The history of many once great towns saw the demise of their township due to being passed over for a railroad. Today, Plea for the Railroad Pub brings a pseudo-revisionist history to life. At this bar, tourists and citizens of the town alike can write petitions to the 19th century Maryland government encouraging Port Tobacco to get a stop on the railroad.
Nice.
And get drunk. Just get absolutely shit-faced. Number 5, a dog park. If there's a ghost dog, he should have friends.
There you go.
And number 6, a Chandler's convention. A town once named Chandler should have a day of gathering with everyone and anyone named Chandler in the world. Friends marathons are fine, but the Chandler convention is more about the copious amount of drinking, food consumption, and people talking about how their parents named them after the 1994 to 2004 sitcom character.
Boom. There it was.
There it was. This event is 18 and older because we do not want 16-year-olds mixing with the copious amounts of drinking. But Chandler convention.
Good work. I like those. Good attractions.
Thank you.
Well done. If you like his Goblin Gallery submission, maybe you'll like something else by him. Check him out on YouTube at Podcasting with Connor and on Instagram at Connor Kafia Chain. If you can't spell it, just go to ST Radio Pod and find him.
If you can't spell it, smell it.
He who spelled it, dealt it. All right, here we go. Coming up next, I got my piece here. So what I thought about for this week's Goblin Gallery is I wanted to offer some solutions to port tobacco's problems, okay? So my first solution is I think they should invent boats with legs so they can crawl over the silted areas of the river.
Hmm.
Very, very Howl's Moving Castle-esque, if you
let
will.
Let me... So boats, right? Boats can swim on water, right?
Yeah.
In theory. And humans can walk on land and swim on water. Mm-hmm. So are we saying we're inventing humans? Because I'm for
pretty
that.
Close. I'm
we
imagining can claim that. Like, I'm imagining like a big steamship, but it has these weird little lizard legs where it can't actually get on land, but it can drag itself over mud like a mud scamp.
Well, do remember, not all lizards have legs, and not all legless lizards are snakes.
Believe me, I remember. All right, solution number two. I propose farmlands with giant Brita filters so the crops can still be grown even if the water sucks. You just put a filter around your farmland and you put it like 200 feet down deep into the soil. Boom, you're fine.
Also, you could just have Brita from the TV show Community stand there.
I need to watch it still. It's on my TV
list.
Oh
my goodness, it's so good.
I've heard. Okay.
Not all of it, just the beginning of seasons.
Item number three. They need some ghost hunters. My reasoning is if we can find the blue dog ghost, we find the treasure. If we find the treasure, we can use that money to build a railroad to the town. Solution number four. If the ghost hunting plan doesn't play out, I invented a train that goes places without tracks. It's called a car. Or if you aren't in the 20th century, a wagon. That's what I got today. If you like my submissions, you can follow me on Twitter at MaximumOfAllen.
And you can follow me at Yeehaw! Whenever you call, I'll come crawling.
There you go. Like a boat over mud. Okay. Well, I think that's it for our show today, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Love you all. Send in your town suggestions to smalltownradiopodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Instagram at stradiopod. And give us a 5-star review, please. If you have any Goblin Gallery submissions you want to submit for previous towns we've done, send them on in. We'll read them off.
Yes, absolutely. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.